Hello, and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth area talking newspaper. Today it's the privilege of the Red Team to be bringing you the latest news from our somewhat soggy region, recorded at our Dawlish studio on Friday the 23rd of February 2024. I'm John Townsend, leading our ever-enthusiastic band of volunteers, four of us this week, bringing you news, articles and announcements before we finish with entertainment on offer at Pavilions Tynmouth and the Shaftesbury Theatre in Dawlish. And so to this week's front pages. The Dawlish Gazette tells how the traffic lights trial in Starcross has stalled at the start, while the Tynmouth Post has the headline, Bid to Rescind Hospital Closure, with the latest in the ongoing battle trying to save Tynmouth Hospital. So, what is the latest attempt to stop the hospital from closing, Anne?
Further bid to overturn hospital closure decision. The long-running saga of the future of Tynmouth Hospital could take another turn with a further bid to get the closure decision overturned. Rule changes over the way such decisions can be referred back to the government for reconsideration mean it is now possible for district councils to take on the mantle. Previously, it had been down to Devon County Council to agree to ask the Secretary of State for Health to look again at the NHS move to shut the historic hospital, the purpose-built NHS hospital, first purpose-built NHS hospital in the country. Now, Teignbridge Council Chairman, Councillor Chris Clarence, a vocal supporter, will be proposing a motion for the district authority to refer the closure of Tynmouth Hospital to the Secretary of State for Health itself. The rule changed on January the 31st, 2024, which allows other bodies, not just Devon County Council, to take such steps. Councillor Clarence, who has supported campaigners battling to keep the hospital open for many years, says such is the strength of feeling that he has 17 district councillors supporting his move for a notice of motion to go before Teignbridge Full Council when it meets on February 27th. His notice of motion states that Teignbridge Council wants the issue referred to the Secretary of State for her to examine the case for not closing the hospital. At the meeting, if two-thirds of councillors present vote for a debate, his motion will be discussed, followed by a decision on whether to proceed with the referral. He explained, nearly a year ago we voted for a debate and then voted unanimously to try and save the hospital, but we didn't have the statutory power then to refer the matter to the Secretary of State, which we now have when legislation changed. So now is the time to do what Devon County Council's committee didn't want to do, despite their own task and finish group recommending to them to do so. Councillor Clarence said it was worth noting that Devon County Council's own task and finish group on the subject had agreed to the referral, which he says should serve us well as evidence that the issue should be referred to the Secretary of State. So something good, I believe, can be salvaged from the disappointment of that DCC meeting. Teignbridge Liberal Democrats are supporting the further referral with a petition running on its website. It says, looking at the state of the NHS, the last thing most of us would say is that we have too many hospitals. Devon has an older than average population and a lower than national average number of hospital beds. The local situation has been confused by the additional need for a new surgery for the local GP surgeries. For far too long, the GPs have been working from old converted residential buildings that are not fit for purpose. The potential new health and wellbeing centre to house the GPs in Tynmouth has been held to ransom on the closing of Tynmouth Hospital. This isn't right and puts money above health for people around Tynmouth. We won't give up. Teignbridge Council's full council meeting takes place on Tuesday, February the 27th at 10 a.m.
Thank you, Sarah. I don't know why I called you Anne. I'm sorry about that. And next to that Dawlish top story about those Starcross traffic lights. It seems something has gone wobbly at the A379 pinch point. Now, Anne, you have the details.
Indeed I do. The article is headlined, U-turn on Starcross traffic lights trial. A trial traffic light scheme due in Starcross was abandoned before it began. The pilot was due to have started on Monday, but according to the Starcross Parish Council, it was halted before the temporary lights were even switched on. Devon County Council experiment was aimed at improving conditions for all road users through the historic pinch point at the 18th century Courtney Arms Mews in Star Cross. But by Monday evening, the parish council said a decision was taken to stop the trial. The council claims when teams tried to set up the equipment on the southern approach, it became clear the trial was going to cause problems for vehicles larger than a car to pass. In a statement, it said, as retaining the signals had the potential to very quickly cause problems and upset local residents and businesses, a decision was taken to remove the trial with immediate effect. A Devon County Council spokesman confirmed, soon after the scheme was implemented, it became apparent it was having a negative impact on traffic flow, so in consultation with the local member, the lights were removed. Starcross Parish Council said it had warned DCC it was looking at implementing the scheme on plans which were years out of date. The width of this section of the road makes it difficult for vehicles, particularly HGVs, to pass easily and often leads to queuing traffic at peak times. Currently, two-way traffic flows on the road past Starcross Fishing and Cruising Club pass in close proximity to pedestrians using narrow footways. The trial of temporary lights on the A379, which had been partly funded by County Council member Councillor Alan Connett's locality budget, was meant to trial how signal controls would work. The lights had been due to be located south of the Courtney Arms Mews car park on the northern side and adjacent to the Galleon Inn on the southern side. The Parish Council has so far declined to make comments on the scheme as it claims the map used to draw up the proposal was out of date. In a statement, the Council says, we requested a copy of the plans for the scheme and this arrived on January the 17th. It was immediately apparent that the map was of the year 2000 and 2013 schemes for removal of the Starcross Fishing and Cruising Club boundary wall in order that the pinch point outside Alexander Mews could be widened from the existing 4.5 metres to 5.5 metres, which is the absolute minimum for two-way traffic. We wrote to Devon County Council and pointed out that the map was out of date and that the illustrated road lines were inaccurate because the removal of the wall had not taken place due to its listed status and remained at 4.5 metres. This measurement was clearly shown on the plans for the pavement widening scheme. We were asked to comment on our concerns, which also included use of alternative routes, and these were compiled and sent to Alan Connett, who forwarded them to the Deputy Director of Planning Highways. They responded to us dismissively, saying that only a trial would show whether the scheme was possible, referring to the width as 5.5 metres and ignoring our phrase that the removal of the wall did not take place and the effect this had had on the road width shown on the plans. We had two meetings where the scheme was discussed at length. It was decided that we would make no further comment since no alternative scheme had been submitted to us. The Parish Council position is currently that as no plan has been put forward to suggest that lights are feasible, it has no comment to make.
Although you're down for the next article as well, Anne, I'm going to give you a breather because we're very stressed here, having coped with the parking machines in Dawlish, which just don't seem to want to help us. They broke down, I think. Anyway, this article says, local radio cuts, a travesty, warns RNIB. Cuts to local radio services have been a travesty to visually impaired people, a national campaign group has warned. It comes as the number of blind and partially blind people registered in Devon has been revealed, with the Royal National Institute of Blind People warning the true number could be even higher. Latest NHS digital figures, which are only released every 3 years, show around 3,650 people in Devon were registered visually impaired as of March. This included approximately 1,710 people who were completely or severely blind and a further 1,940 who were partially impaired. All figures are rounded to the nearest five. Across England, around 270,000 people were registered as visually impaired as of March, of which 130,000 were severely or fully impaired. Of these, 10,500 were children, with around 1,180 based in the southwest. Sarah Gayton, Street Access Campaign Coordinator for the National Federation of the Blind UK, said the BBC's recent cuts to local radio services hit visually impaired people harder, as they rely on the radio for information, entertainment and companionship. Ofcom licensing guidance says BBC local radio stations must provide a certain number of hours of original content each year. But the corporation has sought to make savings in the face of high inflation and a license fee freeze, including plans for local radio stations to share more content and transmit fewer programmes unique to their areas. Ms. Gayton said, "We are not going away and all needs need to be taken into account. Ofcom, the BBC and the government are not listening, and the way blind and visually impaired people are being treated is abhorrent. We feel we have been left behind and are not being listened to. It is down to the BBC and the government to provide people with blind and visual impairments with local radio." A BBC spokesperson said, "We are fully compliant with the Ofcom set operating license requirements and will report on our compliance in July alongside our annual report." A Department of Culture, Media and Sports spokesperson said, "We remain disappointed at the BBC's decision to reduce parts of its local output, and ministers have met with BBC bosses to express concerns about these plans. The BBC must continue providing distinctive and genuinely local services that reflect and represent local communities. Ofcom will ensure the BBC is held to account in delivering these duties."
My next article is entitled DCC to Increase Council Tax. Devon County Council, DCC, have agreed a 4.99% increase in council tax for the coming financial year. It comprises 2.99% for general services, with an extra 2% for adult care. It means an extra £1.56 a week for the average Band D householder. There will be increases of 10.4% in spending on children's services, 6% on adult services, and 4.7% on climate change, environment, and transport. Councillors also agreed an extra £1.5 million to boost regular road drainage since the target budget was set last month to tackle the increase in potholes caused by this winter's heavy rainfall. There will also be £716,000 extra to bring the homelessness budget back up to £1.45 million to support the work of district councils and homeless organisations for another year. Devon's revenue spending on services will increase from just under £700 million to £743 million in 2024-25, an overall rise of 6.3% in spending. In addition, councillors approved a capital budget of over £155 million for investment in infrastructure such as schools and roads. The council tax for an average Band D home will rise by £81.54 to £1,715.67, an extra £1.56 a week. The budget was approved by 34 points votes to 14. Council leader John Hart said, "This is a well-constructed budget increasing expenditure for adults and children and looking after the old, the young and the vulnerable, who account for almost four-fifths of the budget. We have a finite amount of money to spend and we have to allocate it to protect those most in need. But we will ensure that we get the best possible value from every pound we spend on behalf of our residents." This budget also recognises the concerns that people have about the increase in potholes caused by the very wet winter. Cabinet Member for Finances Phil Twiss said, "Local government faces significant challenges despite the government increasing local council spending power where demand outstrips supply. Delivering this budget will not be easy, but we have a senior leadership team working together as one council ready to meet these challenges. All things considered, this is a good budget for Devon." Increasing council tax bills at a time of rising prices and strain on household budgets is not a decision that we have taken lightly. However, demand for our services and the need to protect the most vulnerable means we have no choice but to propose an increase of 4.99% for next year. The budget includes savings, alternative funding, and additional income of £49 million. And there's a photograph here, a picture of the biggest pothole I have ever seen.
Petition aims to bridge the gap. Almost 300 people have signed a petition calling for the reinstatement of a well-used Dawlish bridge after it was completely removed with little warning. The wooden bridge in Manor Gardens had been deemed unsafe following an inspection by Teignbridge Council engineers, but the removal has been condemned as a travesty by park users. It had been out of action and closed by the public to the public for a year due to safety concerns. But now the entire bridge, which spans a right-of-way, has been removed with no indication of it or when it may be replaced. Its disappearance has sparked more anger among users of Manor Gardens, who argue it is a right-of-way and that it had been built with a lifespan of 25 years, maintenance-free, yet has only lasted about 10 years. Teignbridge Council said the bridge had been found to have come to the end of its life. A spokesman said following an inspection, engineers found it to be unsafe and coming to the end of its lifespan and needed to be removed. The council is currently reviewing the viability of replacement options. Work took place to remove the bridge, which spans the brook, last week. Regular users of Manor Gardens have been angry that the bridge was closed off and are now even more incensed that it may not be replaced. Mayor of Dawlish, Councillor Rosie Dawson, is equally angry at the move and started a petition for the bridge to be replaced. Just 6 months ago, it had been confirmed the bridge would be replaced. Structural surveyors had discovered significant safety concerns during the inspection due to the bearers underneath the bridge being found to be rotten. The petition says, during an inspection by Teignbridge District Council in 2023, after a tree fell and caused damage, it was found the structure underneath the wooden bridge in the Manor Gardens, Dawlish, was unsafe. Nearly a year on, and despite previous reassurances, the council have removed the old bridge and insinuated that a replacement is not financially viable. This may constitute a public right-of-way, given its historical use, and TDC have a responsibility as such to maintain, protect and preserve it. This bridge is used a lot by locals and is important. Councillor Dawson says she was assured the bridge would be replaced. She said it did need to be removed as people ignored the barriers and continued to walk over it despite notices, but she is annoyed that it is now being seen as too expensive to replace. Others have questioned whether removing the bridge without replacing it as a right-of-way is legal.
My next article is entitled Asbestos Payout for Former Dawlish Teacher. A retired chemistry teacher from Dawlish has won a £180,000 compensation package after being exposed to asbestos. Alan Turner, now 83, was diagnosed with mesothelioma after working at the former Dawlish Secondary Modern School from 1975 until 1997. Since his diagnosis with the cancer, which affects the pleural lining and is linked to exposure to asbestos, Alan has spoken of his ordeal to help others. Having devoted his life to teaching children, his career started as a lab technician in the 1950s, aged just 16, working at various schools, colleges and universities across the country before he retired in 2000. He spent a significant period of time at Dawlish Secondary Modern School, joining in 1975 and leaving in 1997. His case was settled out of court without an admission of liability from Devon County Council. While working at school, the great-grandfather recalled coming into contact with asbestos, which was present in everyday teaching tools like Bunsen burner gauzes, heat mats, and even his classroom's notice board. Despite the prevalence of the material, he says he was never provided with any protective equipment or made aware of the risks of exposure. Following his diagnosis, he instructed industrial disease experts at national law firm Thompson Solicitors. The firm went on to bring legal action against his former employer, Devon County Council, and later secured a comprehensive £180,000 compensation care package. Speaking of his illness and the impact it has had on his life, Alan said that while he hoped no one else should suffer as he has chosen to speak out so others know how to get help if they need it. He said, "My asbestos exposure took place decades ago, but it was not until 2020 that I realised something was wrong. I was suffering from terrible breathlessness, so I went to my GP, who sent me for a scan. He was diagnosed with fluid on his lungs and pleural thickening, which affects the lining of the lungs. He underwent medical treatment, but his condition continued to deteriorate, and in January 2023, he was diagnosed with mesothelioma. It had a devastating impact on his life, making it difficult to do chores, and he was forced to give up playing table tennis and riding a bike, now relying on a mobility scooter to get out and about. He said the mesothelioma diagnosis was a huge shock. It's hard to imagine that something like this could happen to you, and to find out further down the line that my illness could have been prevented has been very difficult to come to terms with. Thankfully, my wife Jane has been an absolute brick. I couldn't have coped without her. I get exhausted quickly and don't walk very far or fast. Jane also has to cope with my mood swings, and I'm very grateful to her. It's sad to think our retirement together has been so badly impacted as a result of my condition. Lawyer, industrial disease law expert Nick Seymour added, sadly, Mr. Turner's case stands as a stark reminder of the latent dangers that asbestos poses in educational environments and the need for the government to take action to ensure that both teachers and pupils are safe moving forward. While the compensation cannot reverse the diagnosis, it ensures he can access critical treatment and care, which will make a considerable difference to his quality of life.
Biker injured in Sheldon crash. Police are appealing for witnesses after a motorcyclist suffered life-changing injuries in a crash in Sheldon. The 21-year-old biker has been treated in hospital for his injuries following the accident on Tynmouth Road near Labrador Bay. Officers and paramedics were called to the scene just after 2 p.m. on Sunday to reports of a collision involving a blue Yamaha motorcycle. The motorcyclist was said to have sustained a nasty leg injury in the crash. The A379 Tynmouth Road was closed in both directions between Dean Lane and Commons Lane while the casualty was attended to by paramedics. An investigation was carried out at the scene. Officers from the roads policing team have now appealed for information from witnesses and dash cam footage. Anyone who can help with inquiries is asked to contact police through the website or calling 101 and quoting log 415 of February 18th.
No junk food here. Junk foods, or today's buzzword ultra-processed foods, include sugary cereals, fizzy drinks and crisps. If the ingredients list contains E numbers and ingredients you struggle to pronounce, these are signs of ultra-processed, which can be unhealthy for you and the environment. Turn instead to the farmers and producers of Tynmouth Farmers Market this weekend. You will be hard-pressed to find anything except food your grandmother would recognise. Freshly harvested vegetables, such as winter cabbages or leeks from Shillingford Organics, and safely stored hearty varieties of squashes from Shoot Fruit are still available this month. Have you tried squash smiles dusted with herby breadcrumbs or roasted cabbage in your fryer, your air fryer or oven? Beef or lamb from Bearden Farm, bread from Bread of Devon, tempeh from Tip Top Tempeh, and cheese from Kerworthy Cheeses may be processed, but lightly so, with respect for the animals, crops and milk that make them. More information on the market's Facebook page at Tynmouth Farmers Market. For a healthy diet, high environmental credentials and supporting the circular economy of Tynmouth, check out the Tynmouth Farmers Market in the Triangle in Tynmouth on Saturday the 24th, which you might between 10 and 2 p.m., but it might be a little bit late if you don't listen to this before then. And it says at the end, bring your grandmother. If you miss this weekend's, the next one will be on the last Saturday in March.
Summertime banking could be on the cards. Banking could return to Dawlish as early as this summer, the organisation responsible for introducing new banking hubs has said. But mystery still surrounds the location of the facility, which is being introduced following the closure of all high street banks. Cash Access UK, which is rolling out hubs, has sent a community engagement leader to spend a day in the town and to neighbouring Tynmouth as plans to provide much-needed banking services progress. The company says the Dawlish hub is due to open this summer, but as yet, there is no confirmation of the location in either town. MP Anne-Marie Morris, who has been campaigning with national banking bosses for the return of basic banking facilities, has welcomed the progress. She said she was grateful. The community engagement leader from Cash Access spent a day with the local teams involved, first in Tynmouth and then in Dawlish. She said, "We will get there. We made the case that communication with the community about what was going on and when was very important. This was taken seriously. We were able, between us, to identify a few more options for a location, be that as the long-term hub or the short-term temporary site. There are now 34 bank hubs open across the country, including one in Brixham, which allow customers to withdraw cash, deposit cash and cheques, make balance inquiries and pay utility bills. Counter service is provided by the post office. Each of the main clearing banks are involved in the scheme, and community bankers will work in rotation with a different bank available each day of the week, usually provided by banks with the most customers in the area, opening Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. As previously reported in the Dawlish Gazette and Tynmouth Post, Tynmouth is proving more problematic at finding a suitable location, so there could be a temporary hub until a permanent home becomes available. Cash Access UK has told Dawlish residents that the new hub will provide the community with easy access to cash and banking services. A spokesman said, "There are a number of steps involved in opening a hub, and finding the right location is often the most time-consuming part of setting one up. We are working hard to find a suitable location and will keep the community updated with progress. The hub is due to open this summer." A representative from Cash Access UK will be at a cost of living event being held in Dawlish on February the 28th at the Manor House from 2 p.m. In Tynmouth, where the only remaining bank, Lloyds, is due to close in April, the team is working on exploring opening a temporary hub in Tynmouth until a permanent location can be found. Hello, it's Diana speaking. And my story is, firstly, is headed Views Wanted for Skate Park Revamp. Skaters are being encouraged to have their say on Dawlish Skate Park. The Town Council had launched a bid to find out what skaters themselves want from a park. Its Skate Park Working Group is calling for anyone who uses the facility to give their views. A spokesman said, "We are approaching schools, colleges and other groups. We know who use the park and hope to get as much feedback as possible." The plea comes as it has been said the park at Sandy Lane is little used and claims it was ill designed. One claimed it was hardly used for its purpose, adding it is a real shame. With the skate park being behind you, could make this a place where lots of Dawlish youth could hang out around and pick up a hobby of skating and skateboarding. One user explained that the park was designed by skateboarders and is unique because it is one of the only skate parks in the county that has a simple and open layout, unlike the generic cookie cutter skate parks that are normally put in with too many obstacles and not enough space. The Dawlish facility has everything needed to learn to start skating, including flat ground, a small bank, a bigger bank, small ledge, big ledge, and mini ramp. However, another user described it as one of the worst skate parks I've ever used. There is no flow to it. The council's group is looking at improvements to the park and is asking residents to complete the questionnaire to establish how it is currently used and what improvements may be wanted. To have a say, go to Dawlish Town Council website.
Singers brave the briny to raise a few hundred notes for comic relief. It wasn't singing in the rain, but singing in the sea for Dawlish Rock Choir, as they did something funny for money. There was some wishful thinking in the sea of Dawlish as 20 rock choir members gave their rendition of Going Loco in Acapulco during their cold water swim. But it was all in a good cause, and the group's efforts raised £600 in just a few hours for this year's comic relief. Wearing their red noses, the singers took to the water with choir leader Richard Toomer. He said, "We have so much fun mixing two things we love doing, singing and swimming. It was 7 degrees in the water this morning, but that didn't deter us. We were delighted to fundraise for Comic Relief, a great charity changing lives for the better. Rock Choir is the largest contemporary choir in the world, with over 30,000 members from all over the UK. The entire membership will be fundraising this year for Comic Relief, and the Devon Rock Choir was the first to launch their unique fundraising activity with this fun event. Over the next 6 weeks, choirs will be taking part in fundraising activities including surprise singing flash mobs, 12-hour singathons, bake sales, comedy fundraising videos, concerts, fun sessions in choir rehearsals, and much more. Rock Choir is on a national tour of the UK with a show called You're the Voice, which is also fundraising for the charity, and the concert will encourage audience participation. Tickets are on sale now. The next date in the South West is on March the 1st at the Princess Theatre in Torquay.
Local Art Society continues to blossom. The ever-blossoming Tynmouth Art Society, TAS, is holding its 2024 spring exhibition at the Tynmouth Arts Action Group, TAG, Gallery from March the 2nd to March the 8th. TAS has more than 180 members and supports local artists through its various exhibitions and workshops. While some see Tynmouth solely as a place of beauty with its seaside and estuary location, the town is fast becoming the St Ives of the South Devon art scene with a vibrant and thriving local art community. This year's exhibition is being held at the TAG venue at 4 to 5 Northumberland Place, Tynmouth, with both TAS and TAG joining forces. This year's exhibition promises to be an event not to be missed. The venue is in the centre of town, surrounded by cafes, a wide variety of shops, and is near the beach. Visitors play an active role in the exhibition by contributing to the People's Choice Margaret Allenby Award. In keeping with the beauty of spring, other judged award categories include Heat Floral Painting and Portrait and Best Floral Painting. Come along, meet the artists, view their fabulous artwork, and continue the tradition of voting for your favourite exhibit. The TAS Spring Exhibition runs from March the 2nd to March the 8th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and except on the 8th when it is open from 10 to 3 p.m.
New incumbent at St Gregory's. St Gregory's Church in Dawlish has welcomed its new vicar, Reverend Linda Cronin. Reverend Cronin was licensed at the parish church in the presence of the Right Reverend Jackie Searle, Bishop of Exeter, with family, friends and the congregation. Reverend Cronin joins St Gregory's from a parish in Belfast and follows Reverend Dallas Ayling, who left the church last year. The appointment of Reverend Cronin was announced in October to her new role in the parish, which includes Holcombe, Coughton and Starcross, known as the Dawlish Coast Mission Community. Linda takes up the role of team rector. She was given a warm welcome by the St Gregory's congregation.
Free event to help cope with cost of living crisis. More help with the cost of living crisis is available in Dawlish, the latest in a series of 7 events being run across the district over the last few months. The last event was attended by 120 people, 18 organisations, and MP Anne-Marie Morris, where South West Water gave away over 100 water-saving devices, and overall more than 90 people organised follow-up help. Now the date is in Dawlish on Wednesday, February the 28th, where there will be free help and support. Visitors will receive a free raffle ticket with a chance to win a slow cooker, air fryer, electric blanket or other energy-saving gadgets. There will also be some free activities and snacks for children, so people can pop in after the school run. At the Dawlish event, there will be around 18 organisations attending, including Teignbridge District Council, Teen Housing, South West Water, ECOE, and Devon Communities Together for a free energy advice and measures, and help finding a cheaper supplier. Also on hand will be Teignbridge Citizens Advice and Assist Teignbridge for information about accessing advice around benefits. Learn Devon will be represented for free learning and training, including budgeting and money management. The Department for Work and Pensions for information about work and welfare support they offer. Dawlish Community Larder and Dawlish Community Aid and Pet Pantry will join other groups, including Dawlish Community Transport, Roots Community Enhancement, Volunteering in Health, Dawlish Library, Assist Teignbridge, Citizens Advice Teignbridge, Teignbridge CVs, The Strand Community Centre and Hub Store Dawlish. Anyone with concerns about rent and food shopping bills going up, worried about gas and electricity prices, can go along for more information.
Viva Las Dawlish. Vegas is coming to Dawlish with a special event being held to raise money for the mayor's charities. The event is being held at the Manor House and will feature gaming tables, grazing buffet, bar, raffle and auction, and an Adele tribute act. Taking place on Saturday, March 16th at 7 p.m, the evening is raising money for mayoral charities Dawlish Library, Dawlish Museum and Devon Air Ambulance. To search for tickets, visit eventbrite.co.uk and type in Viva Las Dawlish.
Roll up for the Great Rotary Quiz. Entries have been rolling in for Dawlish Water Rotary Club's first grand quiz of the year, but there is still time for both pubs and clubs to enter. The quiz takes place on Thursday, March the 7th, with a top prize of £100 and the Heavy Tree Brewery Trophy for the winners, with further cash prizes to be won, including one for the largest number of players on the night. All winners will be asked to nominate their own particular charity to receive their prize money. Rotary organiser Peter Harrison said, "The twice-yearly quiz has been running for nearly 30 years and we have raised hundreds and thousands of pounds for a huge range of charities, many of them smaller ones that have great difficulty attracting funds. So the more entries, the better." Details are also available on Dawlish Rotary Club's Facebook page or by contacting Rotarian Peter Harrison on 07767 894 737 or by email reliancefinance@talktalk.net.
And there is one funeral notice this week. Doreen Franks sadly passed away on the 13th of February, aged 95 years. Beloved wife of the late Mickey, dear mum of David, Shirley and Jill, and grandmother to all her wonderful grandchildren. The funeral service will take place in St. Peter's Chapel, Exeter and Devon Crematorium on Monday the 11th of March at 12:30 p.m. Family flowers only, please. Donations are welcome for the British Heart Foundation and may be left by retiring collection. All friends welcome at Tynmouth Rugby Club from 1 p.m.
Tynmouth and District U3A. We are so fortunate at Tynmouth and District U3A to be able to offer our members a choice of 52 interest groups to join, one for every week of the year. Our interest groups are the beating heart of our U3A and follow the self-help learning and mutual aid principles by the members for the members. Our 50-plus groups are organised into three categories: general studies, including subjects from art appreciation through to true crime, outdoor activities, including bird watching, tennis and wobbly walkers. Social groups include caravan capers, photography and wine safari, a wide range of topics. We have five new suggestions for groups. Pam Hayes, new group coordinator, is tasked with helping these new groups to launch. Pam reports, our newly formed Park Walk group have now joined in two Tynmouth Park runs at a very sedate space. It is a 5-kilometre, 3 miles, extremely well-organised event which takes place every Saturday at 9 a.m. on Tynemouth Seafront. There is no commitment to take part every week, and if you find that you are only able to complete part of the circuit, that's absolutely fine. It's fun and a great way to get some exercise. The group has grown to 12 members now. We have been able to start a small table tennis group with a trial run at the Richard Newton Hall twice a month on a Wednesday afternoon, and hope to have more members joining whatever your level. Oh, excuse me, there's another bit here that I didn't see. So, another fledgling group, guitar is for those who can already play the guitar and would enjoy getting together with others who play. Our newly formed bereavement group is for those recently bereaved who would like to make contact with others who have also lost their partner to share experiences, benefit from practical help, or just simply meet for a chat in a safe space. We are also exploring the idea of horse riding group for those members that might be interested in riding with others. Watch this space for further ideas. If you would like to know more about joining Tynemouth and District Youth RIA and our interest groups, please look us up at www.tynemouth3a.org.uk or email info@tynemouth3a.org.uk.
Unfortunately, our intrepid sports reporter David can't be with us this week, so I will do my best to bring you a sports-related story called Smashers Set to Tackle Big Charity Walk. Tynemouth Rugby Football Club Chairman Mark Brookfield will be putting his best foot forward during a charity walk next month on behalf of Rowcroft Hospice in Torquay. The teens fundraising team, dubbed the Smashers, are drawn from the club's under 16 squad and their parents. The Big Tackle Charity Walk is an annual event that takes participants on a Saturday stroll around Torquay that starts and finishes at Torquay Athletic RFC. This year's event on March the 9th sets off at 10 a.m. Last year's Big Tackle Walk involved more than 600 entrants and raised a staggering £90,000 for charity. Law firm WBW, Babe Brewery and Torbay Clearance Services all sponsor the event. The Smashers, the name remembers a fearsome set of Tynemouth forwards from yesteryear, are aiming to raise money for Rowcroft's end-of-life programme. Tynemouth RFC, in common with almost every organisation in South Devon, has had members who have benefited from the care given by Rowcroft in the 4 decades since it opened. This fundraising is to keep this valuable support there for the future, said Brookfield. Any donation, however big or small, will be gratefully received and will put a big spring in the step of our walkers. Go to www.rowcrofthospice.enthuse.com/pf/thesmashers to make a donation.
Calling all the heroes. There's still time to nominate a community hero in Dawlish. Dawlish Community Awards are open to put forward individuals for organisations for recognition. There are 3 categories, adult, youth and organisation. The closing date is March 1st. You can fill in a form online at the Dawlish Town Council website or pick up a form from the Manor House.
And so to entertainment on offer in the days ahead, from theatre and film to radio. Even though when I last checked there's only 1 ticket left, you may be interested to know of an event at the Shaftesbury Theatre. Following the sell-out success of their Dawlish History Evening at the Shaftesbury Theatre in the autumn, local historians David Force and Jimmy Hill are back at the Shaftesbury Theatre on the 9th of March at 7 p.m. with their show Exploring the Past. The evening will be divided into 2 halves. David will give an illustrated talk on how Dawlish grew from a small fishing village into an elegant seaside resort during Georgian and Victorian times. This was mainly due to the influence of 3 gentlemen, Charles Hoare, John Edie Manning, and of course, Isambard Kingdom Brunel. It's a fascinating story. After the interval, Jim will present an hilarious, no-holds-barred account of his life growing up in Dawlish during the 1950s, 60s and 70s. This was before there were any supermarkets in the area, when you could buy almost anything in the local shops. It was also a time when everyone knew everyone else, and the local bobby could give you a clip round the ear for being cheeky. Whether you are a Dawlishian, born and bred, or whether you have moved into the area and have an interest in its history, this promises to be a fascinating evening. David and Jim are passionate about Dawlish, and this really shows through during their presentations. All profits go to Rosie Dawson's mayoral charities, Devonair Ambulance, Dawlish Museum, and Dawlish Library. Also set firmly in the past is the Shaftesbury's special spring drama production portraying the famous novel by Laurie Lee of his childhood 100 years ago in a secluded village. The play of Cider with Rosie evokes the simplicity and innocence of a vanished rural world. Performances are from the 24th to the 27th of April and tickets are already selling. The box office is at 01626 86306. At Tynmouth Pavilions next Tuesday, 27th of February, at 2:30 and 7:30 p.m, the film Priscilla is just for you if you're an Elvis fan. When teenager Priscilla meets Elvis Presley at a party, the man who's already a meteoric rock and roll superstar becomes someone entirely unexpected in private moments, a thrilling crush, an ally in loneliness, and a gentle best friend. Certificate 15. Also on Tuesday, the 27th of February, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Topsham and Darts Farm, and the following Tuesday, the 5th of March, they're going to Exmouth. The telephone number 01626 888890. On Saturday, the 9th of March, the monthly sale at St Paul's Starcross is from 11 to 2 p.m. And on Sunday, the 10th of March, Mothering Sunday service at St. George's Church, Holcombe, is at 9:30 a.m. And finally, for details of radio programmes coming up over the next week, stay tuned after our final music, as there'll be a 10-minute taster of interesting listening from the BBC from Saturday onwards, recorded for you by the Talking News Federation. So on that entertaining note, we come to the end of this week's news. As always, we welcome feedback on 07376 147374. Just leave a message and someone will get back to you. It'll be good to hear from you. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this week's Here and Now, as I close our programme by wishing you a delightful week ahead, when it will be the turn of the Yellow Team to bring you the news next Friday, the 1st of March. This week it has been the pleasure of the Red Team to bring to you Here and Now. Our producer is Sarah Williams, our other readers have been Anne Hibbard and Diana Coulson, also our copiers and dispatchers together with Margaret Reynolds, and me, John Townsend. So from all of us here, it's goodbye until next time, next month.
Goodbye.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, February 24th. And we start with Bong, the condensed history of Big Ben. Originally broadcast in 2009, celebrating 150 years of time-telling, it can be heard again to mark the 100th anniversary of the first time the Bongs went national on BBC airwaves. There's opportunities to tune in on Radio 4 Extra at either 7.15 in the morning, 12.15 at lunchtime, or 6.15 in the evening. Also on Saturday, Greg Jenner is joined by historian Dr. Gillian Stinchcombe and comedian Sadia Azmat to learn all about the legendary Queen of Sheba. They look at the legends from Europe, Africa and the Middle East from 600 BC to today. That's Your Dead to Me, Radio 4, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. Drama on Radio 4 is Kane, a dramatisation of Jean Toomer's 1923 novel, a landmark in African-American literature. In opening lines at 2:45, John York looks at how the book was written at a critical period in US history, during the Great Migration, when many African-Americans moved from the South to the North. And the drama Kane follows at 3 o'clock on Radio 4. So opening lines, 2:45, the drama Kane, 3 o'clock. You can hear a recent New York Metropolitan Opera House performance of Verdi's Un ballo in maschera, a masked ball, at 6:30 on Radio 3. The 1859 work is loosely based on real events that led to the assassination of Gustav III of Sweden in 1792, with Verdi developing the story of the personal tragedy of a ruler in love with his best friend's wife. And lastly for Saturday, dramatisation of the 6 Arnold Bennett novels following the inhabitants of Bursley and Five Towns between 1865 and 1903 continues. In Chinatowns, at 9 o'clock, Saturday evening, Radio 4, industrial action brings Bursley to a standstill. Sunday, February 25th, and Lauren Laverne's guest on Desert Island Discs is movie costume designer Sandy Powell, the winner of 3 Oscars. 11:15, Radio 4. 3 Million is a new series exploring the story of the Bengal famine of 1943, in which at least 3 million people died. The series begins in 1942, as the Japanese sweep through Southeast Asia and Calcutta is inundated with hundreds of thousands of Allied soldiers. 1:30 for 3 million, Radio 4, Sunday lunchtime. The drama on Radio 4 is Tristram Shandy in development, a comedy set in an audio drama workshop on a production of Lawrence Stern's Tristram Shandy. The drama is on Radio 4 at 3 o'clock. And 2 more dramas follow at 7:30 tonight. Firstly, Radio 3, Terminal 3. Celebrated Swedish playwright Lars Norén died in January 2021. Here Toby Swift directs Norén's 2006 play set in a hospital waiting room, where a couple await the birth of their first child, while another couple have been asked to identify the body of their son. Also at 7:30, but on Radio 4, the first episode of Jazz Emu, The Sound of Us. When his best friend's relationship hits the rocks, musician Jazz Emu sets out to write them the most romantic song ever to reignite their passion. Radio 4, 7:30 for Jazz Emu, The Sound of Us. And lastly for Sunday, Slow Radio. In 2017, audio producer Phil Smith travelled to Ukraine to attend his friend's wedding. There he fell in love with the sound world of the sleeper train. Revisiting these recordings 7 years later, the journey offers echoes of a Ukraine in calmer times. Slow Radio, Sleeper Train, Radio 3, 11:30 p.m. On to programmes then that are broadcast each day at the same time, same radio station. So each weekday, same time, same radio station. And Book of the Week is Ritual by Dimitri Zengalas. The first episode explores ritual across the animal kingdom and how its importance lasts a lifetime. Book of the Week, 9:45, Radio 4. Every morning. Composer of the week is Bedrick Smetana, 1824 to 1884. Donald MacLeod explores his life and career following him as he grew from naive revolutionary into one of the most foundational figures in Czech music. Composer of the week, every weekday, 12 noon, Radio 4. In The Political Butterfly Effect, Jim Waterson explores each day, this week, a single moment that inadvertently shaped modern history. From Mr. Blobby and the effect the failed theme park had on Morecambe, to whether the loss of a handwritten note from Boris Johnson caused his 2016 Conservative leadership campaign to collapse, and led to Theresa May becoming Prime Minister, tasked with negotiating Brexit. The Political Butterfly Effect, 1:45, every day this week, Radio 4. What you can see from here, Mariana Lecky's bittersweet portrayal of small village life continues in the Book of Bedtime, 10:45, every night, Radio 4. Alternatively, the essay Moments of Being, Joanna Robertson celebrates the moments that shape, frame and colour our lives on Radio 3, every night, 10:45. On to the individual highlights then for the rest of the week, starting with Monday, February 26th. And Sabine, the Radio 4 drama continues. Ellie's been staying in Sabine's flat to pack up her things. But after finding some surprising evidence of her sister's room, Ellie's desperate to learn the identity of a mysterious individual only referred to as F. Sabine, 2:15, Radio 4, Monday afternoon. The artificial human this week asks, could AI swing an election? The programme looks at the AI tools that can be used to sow disinformation, shows how it already comes into play in different elections around the world, and discovers how we can best arm ourselves from people who want to sway our votes and turn an election. The Artificial Human, 4:30, Monday afternoon, Radio 4. And Middlesbrough is one of the most deprived towns in England. David Baker, who grew up there in the 1970s, returns to ask what can be done to revive its fortunes. What can teach us about regenerating small, post-industrial towns? This week's analysis, Monday evening, 8:30, Radio 4. Tuesday, February 27th, in Young Again, Kirsty Young invites artist Grayson Perry to look back at his earlier years and consider what advice he would give to his younger self. Expect a lot of laughter and acute observation. 11 a.m, Radio 4, Young Again. The afternoon concert features Brahms' first piano concerto on Tuesday, which is built on an epic scale with a brooding, turbulent first movement that takes up almost half of the playing time. You can also hear, among others, Offenbach's Overture Bluebeard, Mozart's Divertimento in F, and Duke Ellington's Harlem. The concert starts at 2 o'clock on Radio 3 on Tuesday afternoon. The drama on Radio 4 is A Tsar in London, a tragicomic taking on the months that Tsar Peter the Great spent in London learning about shipbuilding and naval tactics, destroying the house and garden of writer John Evelyn, and roistering with actress Letitia Cross. 2:15, A Tsar in London, Radio 4. Also on Tuesday, a thorough examination with Doctors Chris and Zandy focuses on exercise. The twins meet their younger brother for a session on an exercise bike and discuss the importance of exercise for an ageing society. 3:30, Radio 4. 8 o'clock on Radio 4, a coal town mystery in which File on 4 team investigate the historic use of coal miners' organs in research and look at whether permissions were sought. 8 o'clock, Radio 4 for a coal town mystery. And of course it's followed by In Touch, as it's a Tuesday with Peter White at 8:40, also on Radio 4. Wednesday, February 28th, more or less, the programme that explains and often debunks the numbers and statistics used in everyday life is on Radio 4 at 9 in the morning. In Lady Killers with Lucy Worsley, the historian this week delves into the case of 19-year-old Frieda Ward in Memphis, Tennessee in 1892 after a stormy and illicit relationship. The murder caused a nationwide sensation and influenced the way lesbians were perceived by the press and public for decades. Radio 4 for Lady Killers, 11:30, Wednesday morning. While in 2020, David Guttenmacher began to buy old photographs and videos in second-hand shops. Sad about the prospect families had lost their treasured memories, he begins to reconnect people with their personal archives. But it isn't always that straightforward. Sideways with Matthew Syed is on Radio 4 at 4 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon. Thursday, February 29th, and a dramatisation of W. Somerset Maugham's 1944 novel The Razor's Edge, in which a war veteran travels to Paris on a spiritual quest to find some answers. Part 1 is on Radio 4 Extra at 10 in the morning, or 3 in the afternoon, and concluding at the same time on Friday. Back to Thursday, and The Listening Room is the afternoon drama, true stories of five people whose lives have been turned upside down through being perpetrators or victims of violent crimes, in their own words. The drama is on at 2:15 on Radio 4. Followed by Claire Balding's Ramblings, and this week she joins a walk on a winter's night with no torches crossing the South Downs close to the East Sussex town of Seaford. Her guide is Caroline Whiteman, who began these walks as an experiment in overcoming her fear of the dark. Join Claire and her companions at 3 o'clock on Radio 4 for Ramblings. Roger Allam and Joanna Lumley star in the very funny Conversations from a Long Marriage, and this week tension mounts as the internet goes down. You can hear it on Radio 4 at 6:30. Radio 3 in Concert, which has been described as one of the most majestic and moving experiences in all of romantic art, Bruckner's Ninth Symphony. The live concert starts at 7:30 on Radio 3. Lastly, Friday, March 1st, another new month. In Room 101 with Paul Merton, comedian Desiree Birch attempts to banish her pet hates, standing, sexting, and underdone British bacon. 11:30 in the morning, Radio 4. Drama, Love and Other Lies continues. Josie and Tyler are now working as a money mule for the Catfishers. Then the police, who are onto the gang, call Josie in for an interview. 2:15, Friday afternoon, Radio 4. And finally, for the week, and Friday, 9 p.m, comes a Classic FM exclusive, with a rare insight into the world of the New Zealand-born soprano, Kiri Te Kanawa, ahead of her 80th birthday on March 6th. It includes an interview with Alla Jones and recorded performances with music by Cantilupe and Mozart. Dame Kiri Te Kanawa at 80, Classic FM, 9 o'clock, Friday evening, and it does continue on Saturday as well at the same time. That's it. Thank you so much to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable week of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.